Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Just came to me there. Newspaper industry, the news industry, it's quite unique in one aspect. That I could pick, I'm doing it just now, I suppose, you could argue that if I've got a guest and somebody Googles that guest to look for information in that guest, then I could pop up as much a chance to Google as the Herald, the Sun, the Daily Record. So I suppose even I'm guilty of it. Nobody's guilty of it. It's just the way things transpired. So anybody in this day and age, and I mean literally anybody with an iPhone, can be competition and put something out that competes with your industry. Mm-hmm. I can't think off the top of my head of another single industry where that is actually true, because the guy that made our headphones, you and I could not start, you know, going competition with him, mm-hmm. the microphone guy, you know, it would just be ridiculous.
Whether you're selling cars or you're selling cakes or loaf of bread or juice, mm-hmm. you can't just go and start up and suddenly start competing with Ambrew. Mm-hmm. You can't go and start up and start selling as many pastries as Greg's do.
Well, you could, but it would take a lot of time and it would take a lot of money mm-hmm. to go from selling cars to selling cakes. Mm-hmm. But if you've got an iPhone, which 99.9% of the population have got, or Androids, other phones are available. But you could put something, you know, the quality might not be, you know, maybe questionable, but instantly compete against a guy that's been doing it for 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
It's one of the challenges that we face. It's one of the things why we have to say, if you look from a Rangers Review perspective, we have to try and sell it to people of why are we better? Why are we ahead of the competition? What are we offering you as a subscriber that's worth paying for? We're asking you to pay. I've got an offer on just now. Why is it worth £12? Now, £12 over 12 months doesn't seem a lot, but the more people do it, the more we can then invest in equipment, the more we can then invest in further members of staff. We can make the website better. As you say, MD could say, well, I fancy being the Rangers Review. I fancy taking them on. I can go to games and do match reports. I could do some of the video stuff they do. I could launch a podcast and do it from the house. Chris does it for his house. Why can't I do it from my house? So that level of competition has never been as fierce. And it's up for whether it's the Herald as a newspaper or somebody as a broadcaster or for us as a website. We have to offer people something that's worth paying for. I think that level of professionalism is one of them. You know that anything we put out is done by experienced guys. It's been sourced. It's been checked. We're not just putting something out. I think that's always one of the kind of things that strikes me with like social media. If you put something out and you get it wrong, it doesn't make any difference. People will forget it. If I put out a transfer rumour and say Rangers are definitely signing him at lunchtime tomorrow and he goes and he signs for a team down south, that's then cast up to me 6 months down the line, 18 months down the line. I think that's one of the differences between the rise of fan media and the pressures that professional or more mainstream media are under. what we say still carries weight. And that's not to say that bloggers and podcasters and other doesn't. I think people still look at us in a different way. And that's a good thing, because they should do, because there is a level of professionalism, there's a level of pride in our product that should be there. And we want to put out the best that's possible. We want to put out the best videos, do the best match reports, do the best interviews and best analysis. And people should hold us to a higher standard, because we hold ourselves to that standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, fair point. But this is a bizarre podcast, because, and this is what happens, but I don't come into my podcasts and have a script. I sometimes have two or three notes that I want to go with a conversation, but I generally just come in and we start talking about somebody. And the idea behind the podcast is to know what's behind that person. I mean, your name, your face, your picture will be known to probably everybody that tunes in and watches us. Or why would they not tune in to look at my face? And this whole podcast is about getting, you know, what drives them, getting to know about them. But we've spent nearly an hour talking about the industry, so I do apologise. But we've just went off on one. And that again, is just an interesting part of what I'm doing with us. Talk to people and, you know, conversations go, and people might find it interesting or they might not. I hope they do. But to take you back into the Chris part of the podcast, and that was a fascinating conversation, by the way, just us discussing, you know, media and where it might or might not end up. Hope people find it interesting. But you going back to this 2008 time at the Herald, and it went on for a year, just you turning up and, you know, brass necking it, basically. At that time, you would have had a first time where they went, "We're taking you to Ibrox," or "We're taking you to the Rangers training ground." And as a Rangers fan, you're quite happy to declare that. How did that feel?
That first press conference, I can't actually remember. I know my first Old Firm game was the Jelavich Cup final. The first game I ever did for the Herald was Alloa against Clyde, I think. Can't remember. Nobody asked me the score, because I don't know. But it's that first time driving in through the gates of Auchinhow, I can't actually remember that one. I know Walter would have been the manager. The media conferences actually used to be held up beside the manager's office. So for those that know Auchinhow, you get in through the academy entrance, go through the corridors, and then round the rotunda type bit, and there's stairs that take you up. So manager's office is there, and then used to be an analysis room beside the canteen. So that's where all the press conferences, if the daily guys were, the Sunday guys were in a separate room. So you're just sitting in this room with the guys from your own desk that you know, but like faces from other papers that you've got you know their byline, you'll know roughly who they are. But you're almost every week, you're then meeting fresh faces. Some guys you might see two or three times in the space of a couple of weeks. It could take you weeks before you then get to like meet somebody else for a second time. And it's just about getting yourself within that. People can talk about the press pack. It's about getting yourself self-known, getting yourself trusted is one of the biggest things. So guys have to know that you'll ask proper questions and you're not going to take the interview off on a tangent that's of no use to them. But also know that you'll chip in, you'll do your share of the quotes, and that you'll adhere to the embargo. So there's a lot of aspects of it that it's about building trust, not just in your own desk. They're trusting you to go up and ask the right questions and to be able to ride to a certain standard on deadline, to a certain length. Your desk are trusting you to go and do that. But winning the trust of guys at other papers, other organisations, is almost just as important, because over the course of your career, you will need these guys. So the guys that I met on those first couple of trips up to Auchinhow, or the guys that I've met in the first couple of games that I ever did, they're still colleagues, and many of them are now friends. What are we, 14, 15 years on? It's a long time to have those relationships, and those relationships, in a number of cases, have really gone from strength to strength. And it goes back to those early days. If they make it, it's almost like a player. If you see a player and you don't fancy him, and you think, nah, he's just not up to it, it's a long way to then win yourself back around. How many players have we seen been written off early on, and they can't win themselves back around in the eyes of fans? And it's almost the same type of thing. You have to be trusted in the environment. And if you get that early on, I say the game and the business, then not just can take you on a whirlwind from there.
Well, first question I asked you was about your starting life and whatever, and you declared very early on in this conversation favourite Seville Rangers fan, all the rest of it. And that's something that I've had an issue with in my head for a few years now. You are a guy that works as a journalist in sport, and in specifically, although maybe not always the case, always the time, but specifically football. In the west of Scotland, that normally forbids you to have any declaration of faith to either Rangers or Celtic, which I find a bit bizarre, because if you are a journalist or a referee, you're probably doing those jobs because you've already had a passion for football mm-hmm. in the first place. And to actually expect the people doing those jobs to have no feelings towards any of the biggest two clubs in Scotland, if they were brought up in the west of Scotland, is mental. But, you know, you're not hiding the fact. When did you make that decision that you were comfortable with people just, you know, accept or don't accept that I'm actually a Rangers fan?
In terms of like, the press pack or in terms
well,
of...
Well, I suppose there's two there, aye. There's when would you, you know, is it a sort of thing with the press? You don't want anyone to know where your allegiances lie, but I think even more important and a bigger mm-hmm. impact in your life might be the public.
In terms of press pack, I don't think there was ever a moment of I can't tell MD who to support, because as I say, when you go into these situations, if the presser, for example, is at 1 o'clock, you're at the training ground half an hour before, you've got a lot of time. We spent hours and hours of our lives sitting in meeting rooms, waiting on people coming to speak to us. There's always the conversation then goes on about games, about life, about trips, whatever. So it's these type of things are always going to come up. And if you're one of the new guys, again, I've seen it over the last few years, like work experience guys come in and you say, oh, this is so-and-so, he's in a work experience with the Herald. One of the first questions will be, what team do you support, wee man? No, and it's just
that's any workplace, that, isn't that, it?
That's just a workplace, that's just the industry. And if he says Rangers or he says Celtic, it doesn't make any difference to how he's then going to be like treated by everybody else. I say there's guys who are from different sides of the divide, get on great, go on trips together, have been at each other's weddings, are best friends. It doesn't make any difference. It's just like any other workplace, any other industry. But for some reason, when it comes to Scottish football, it's such a polarising thing. You actually mentioned something earlier on, Craig, about the guys that can be or journalists that are unfriendly to the club or don't read him or hates the club, and it's people then get like kind of put into a bracket, whether it's right or wrong, and they lump everyone together. So there was a stage where Rangers fans, it was all press are bad. Well, that's not the case. There are perhaps guys who are no fans of the club. Well, there's guys that are fans of the club, but they were all lumped in with clumped into one bracket. People will support Rangers, people will support Celtic, they'll support Motherwell, they'll support Killy. And as you say, you can't be as involved, you can't be as invested in journalism and do the job and put in the hours if you don't like football. If you there's nobody in the business that's doing this and is a massive rugby fan and they completely hate Scottish football. Because if you did hate Scottish football, you just couldn't do the job. It's impossible to do. And I've never really got the thing off, he supports him, therefore he's bad. People can support a different team and still do the job professionally and honestly and properly, and many guys do. Not everyone that writes about Rangers supports Rangers. There's a number of us that do, a number of us that don't, but the guys that don't are just as invested in the job as, like, say, myself or someone else. So I've never really had the thing of I need to hide it from the rest of the press guys, because it'll put me in a certain bracket. However, I've had the nickname of Union for a long time now. It's not it's not that hard to understand why, but again, that's how people just know me now, and people at clubs that know me as that, and it's not a case of, well, we can't speak to him because he's a Rangers fan, or we can't deal with him because he's a Rangers fan. If you do the job properly and you do it honestly and do it professionally, you should be able to deal with whoever, regardless of what club it is, or they should be able to deal with you regardless of what club you actually support.
But why, and it's refreshing, by the way, to somebody to just sit and go, support Rangers. Doesn't stop me being a journalist, and it's just now your job is uniquely, you know, about Rangers. Mm-hmm. But for a long time, even at the Herald, that was mm-hmm. similar. But you would cover other sports. Sometimes you'd cover other games, and nobody knows what's going to happen in the future. But it doesn't mean you're incapable of covering any other team. So why are you find it so comfortable with just saying, well, I'm a Rangers fan, and probably 90% of your fellow journalists are so uncomfortable with it?
I don't really know, to be honest. I've never understood this thing of, well, I need to like hide her support. As I say, if you're in the business, you have to be invested in Scottish football. If you're invested in Scottish football, you're going to have a team. Everybody's got a team. So I don't get why you'd have to hide who it is. Nobody's ever asked me that question of who do you support, son? And I've said Partick Thistle. Because I don't.
That's something that I found bizarre. I remember in my youth finding it very, very odd that statistically, probably in the west of Scotland, if you're a football fan, it's probably a 90% chance that you support Rangers or Celtic. That, you know, if that figure's wrong, it'll not be far wrong, right? But 90% of the people that were on TV or in newspapers supported either St Mirren or Partick Thistle. And you're like, how'd that work? Stopped the Rangers and Celtic fans working in the press?
I've seen the crowds at Far Hill. They're not that big. I've done enough games in my time at Far Hill to know that they're not always that big. I've never really understood that kind of hesitancy to say, I'm a football fan. Two, I'm a football journalist. And over and above that, yes, I'm a Rangers fan. I don't really see what the problem with that is.
And I think perversely, I'm also not advocating for a stipulation that everybody must declare. I find that notion a bit ridiculous. There's some people saying that about referees. So what I'm trying to say is, if a referee wants to come out and say he supports whoever he supports, that's down to him. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't really think it's a big issue and never wants to talk about it, then equally, that is fine. You know, but if a referee goes into a Rangers pub or a Celtic pub, it kind of points in the right direction. But if he doesn't want to come out and just basically say, I'm a Rangers fan, I'm a Celtic fan, kind of understand that as well. So I'm not advocating, by the way, that every journalist and official...
Everybody has to sign a waiver and declare it before
they start. I'm not going to put a wee star of David on some people and, you know, to define them for the rest of their life and everything they do. But I just find it refreshing. Right on, and, you know, 5 minutes into the podcast, you're like, I'm a Rangers fan, I went to Seville, and I'm like... Psh. That's not what journalists do. But in saying that, there must be some times in your job where you've been in situations where you've been interviewing somebody or in the presence of somebody and you've just been, oh, that's such and such, and been in awe of them. What situations is that? What sort of types of situations are those, Chris, if it has?
It's not very often I've actually been starstruck. I think the first time you see someone like that, those first couple of pressers doing Walter, obviously special. Eventually, after a while, it just becomes Walter. Yep. And that's me who didn't know him that well. And the guys who have been on trips with him, guys who have been on nights out with him, guys who have known him, who had known him for many, many years and consider him a close friend. That was just a wonderful relationship for those guys to have. Can't think of him but I've really been like starstruck by. Souness always stands out. I did Souness at Hampden one day. It was up for a PR thing ahead of a Scotland game or might have been a Rangers Celtic semi-final affair, I can't remember. And I was just really struck by the way that he spoke, and he had that kind of like command of the room. It was a huge big room at Hampden, maybe only eight guys sitting around about a table. And Souness then comes in and sits down, and he just had that aura about him that you expect. Gerrard had that as well. The first couple of times dealing with Gerrard, you think, now this guy's got something a bit different. But I can't really think of anybody that's come and I've thought, I can't speak to you, I can't ask you a question because you are X, because again, you're there to do a job. You're not there to get autographs or get pictures or to fanboy people. You're there to ask them questions and then do your stuff afterwards. So I've been impressed by people. So as soon as stands out, and in terms of that particular presser, Walter, obviously, guys like McCoys are obviously just great company to be around. And it is quite cool, if you like. Now you're now, if I go to a game, you'll see McCoys, and I come up and chat. And having these relationships with people who as kids, you were just like, that's idol type stuff. You grew up watching Walter's teams. You grew up watching Coyce score goals. Now you're actually getting to speak to them. But I think that, again, that professionalism kicks in, and you're there to do a job. But that's not to say that you can't be impressed by individuals. I say Walter, McCoys, Souness definitely stand out from a Rangers legend perspective. In the first wee while that we dealt with Gerrard, he was a really impressive character as well. Even in terms of someone like Gerrard, the first couple of times he dealt with him, I was on his first pre-season, And it was great to deal with. He had that stature, had that aura about him when he walked into a room and the way that he answered questions. But after a while, he just became Stephen Gerrard, Rangers manager, not Stephen Gerrard, Liverpool legend, Rangers, England captain, all the rest of it. And eventually he knew who you were, and he had that bond with him. So I think over time, that kind of awe factor, if you like, certainly diminishes. So I think through all of them, you know you're there to do a job. They know that you're there to do a job. So it's not the time for selfies and autographs. Yeah. I think if you get to a certain level with them, so whether it be former players or managers, once you have that relationship and you're friendly, say you're doing a charity do and you went to a shirt sign, you could say, like, by the way, could you go and sign that for us? And because you didn't have that relationship, it'd be no bother at all. You wouldn't walk into your first press conference and say, by the way, Stephen, I'm a big fan, could you go and sign that for me? Because that then puts in his mind, it puts a negative slant on you. It's like, well, who's this wee guy? I'm here as Rangers manager. This is meant to be a professional environment. I'm meant to be asking questions or answering questions, sorry, from professional working people, not guys who are just here for selfies. And he actually had that quite a lot. The first couple of seasons in Europe, the number of pressers we went to, like Macedonia and some of the trips, and those guys just in the audience, or in the audience is the wrong word, in the press conference, guys just there to say, I sat in the same room as Stephen Gerrard, or asked Gerrard a question, and guys would go up to him, oh, Stephen, can you sign that, or can I get a picture, or can you phone my mum? It's like, these things are just daft. It's meant to be a professional environment. And to be fair to Gerrard, he handled the whole thing really, really well. Everywhere he went, he was signing shirts and he was taking pictures, because he knew that the one time he said no, that then goes viral on social media, and it made him look bad. And the way that he dealt with, like, being Stephen Gerrard was really impressive, and he almost then felt a bit more at ease. So he would do the local press and it would be a bit more fanboy type stuff, and then maybe coming to us in a wee corridor, and you could just see him relaxing, because he knew that wasn't what we were there for. We were just there to talk about Rangers and talk about the game. So I think that aspect of it, I think the Scottish press, thankfully, there's a lot less of that. We don't really do that. We don't really have that culture over here. And it's been really interesting going on some of the trips and seeing how other media, press packs, if you like, do deal with guys that have that stature. And so thankfully, it's not something that we do, because if you did, there's plenty of old-timers round about that would be quick to give you a slap in the back of the head and bring you down a peg or two.
So you're suggesting the Scottish media's moved on since the Jim White days of why are you so good, Brian?
I don't think I've ever asked that particular question myself. Depending how this season goes, I might ask it to the manager, you never know. No, I think it's not something that I've seen. Can't remember I've actually seen it in a Scottish press conference. There's nobody, as you say, it's just cringy. It's not why we're there. It's not professional, and it's not something that I've seen in a Scottish press pack, thankfully.
So you, is there anybody that you've went in and started a relationship, professional relationship with, that you've been surprised at how nice they are? You remember somebody that you went in and think, God, they're going to be a bit hard, they're going to be tough to deal with, and they've just been cracking?
Probably not from a manager-player perspective. I mentioned Jim Traynor. I don't know if he'll thank me for mentioning him, but people had this idea of Jim being hard to work for, hard to work with. But during his time as PR at Rangers, I got on with him great, still speak to him now. And I think he's, if you're looking for someone that surprised me, I'd probably say Jim, because I think people had this idea of just an angry wee man and not nice to deal with, and wouldn't pick up the phone, and really hard to work with and work for. I know people have had that experience with him, but anytime I've dealt with him, he's been a gentleman, really, really good to work with, and thankfully got on with him great. So I can't think of a manager or player. Rangers managers, and I say Walter was great, Coisty. Cashinha was obviously whatever he was, and that was just a bit daft.
Surreal.
Warburton, I think, got on with overly well. Didn't particularly enjoy that. From it'd be because him mostly been my like first manager that I dealt with regularly. So rather than being like, can you go and do the Motherwell presser today, or can you go and do Rangers? As soon as he came in and that changing happened, I was in on pre-season in Charleston with him, And during that whole spell, it was me that was doing every presser, every game, every interview, every day's coverage of Rangers. It was me. Didn't get on well with Warburton, didn't particularly. I don't think he liked me. I said, didn't overly enjoy that particular working relationship. Everybody else since then, and there's also been a couple since then. Gio was great. Bill was good in his own way, because he obviously spoke, and you were never short of. I never short of words. Clement, I've been really impressed by. If you're looking for someone to be surprised by, I'd perhaps put him in there. Because word had come from Belgium when it was obvious he was getting the job. Also, speak to guys over there. What's he like? Is he going to be chatty? Is he going to say nothing? I think so far, he's not. He doesn't speak in headlines. He doesn't speak in riddles, or there's no like bullshit there, to be honest. It's straightforward. But it's good in that way, because you know, if you ask a silly question, he'll let you know you've asked it. A bit like Gerard in that regard. If you ask him something.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Daft. I was answered in a way that he didn't obviously approve of. He's like, well, that's... It became evident that he was unimpressed by the level of question. But that was your fault for asking something silly. I think Clement's got that about him as well. He's got a certain stature and a certain way of dealing with the press guys. It's been really impressive so far. So I didn't really know what to expect. Didn't have huge expectations for him coming in, just from what I've heard. Thought he might be a bit reserved and quite kind of straight bat. He does have that side to him, but I think there's a number of things he said have been really interesting. So I've been pleasantly surprised by him.
May that continue? You were saying about Warburton, that surprises me, because I did meet him a couple of times, and forgetting about, you know, what happened to end his career, because there's a big grey area over that, and I tried to ask Paul Murray about that, and he didn't really want to go down that road, which is fine, I totally respect that. So it's a grey area as to, you know, what happened in the end there, but up until that point, I bumped into him two or three occasions, and he seemed like a nice enough guy, and... Paul Murray, I would imagine, would have a bigger insight into what actually happened in you or I, and that's just matter of fact. And if Paul decides that he does something he's not comfortable or doesn't want to, I've got to appreciate that, and I've got to respect that. But that time there was two totally distinct stories came out. Rangers were adamant he had resigned, and the wee grey area had been, had he actually resigned or had his agent resigned on his behalf? And Warburton, even to this day, I saw a podcast as recently as this month where he's saying, I did not resign for Rangers. Now, that's not even close. You know, there's 180 degrees of difference there. It's not something that, you know, you can figure out where the common ground is. There is no common ground here. You either did or you didn't resign, and the two parties are saying completely opposite things. What's your understanding of that debacle?
Different from Mark Warburton's version of events, but that way. I'd heard about Nottingham Forest. There was a press conference, I think it must be a Friday, can't remember what the game was. Presser on the Friday, up to the training ground as usual, sitting in one of the meeting rooms just waiting on them coming in, and I got told beforehand about the Forest interest. Asked them about it, and of course they knocked the whole thing down, wanted to know why I was asking the question, wanted to know who told me. I'm not going to tell you that, obviously. And then within hours, he's no longer Rangers manager. And so the truth was, as you say, it can't be somewhere in the middle. It's either this side or it's this side. So
I'm not a journalist. I never pretend to be. I don't know if I know now and then, but I know now, it might have been a career that I'd considered as a younger, because I spent I'm 50 now and I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. But I knew with the limited contacts I've got, that he'd been at other clubs and down south for interviews and didn't get the jobs. And, you know, I'm going, there's something going on. And I have no reason whatsoever to doubt the source that I got. And it wasn't a journalist. It was someone within football. And that's me, Craig Houston. No, me, Craig Houston, journalist. That's 15, 20 years experience, 40 years, like some of your guys that you're working with. And I just found the whole thing bizarre. I'm not surprised, you know. So you reckon Warburton's side of the story is probably further for the truth than the club's in?
I said it's probably going to be one of these ones. Nobody will ever have the definitive account because guys, obviously, you've had Paul on, guys that were at the club by that time, it's not really worth their while dragging it up. It's interesting that Warburton is still telling his side of it, and it's still, I say, even just in the last couple of weeks, it's still sticking to his story, and that's fine. If that's how he says that it unfolded, fine. No, nobody can disprove him, but other people also have a different chain of events, and overall, it just wasn't really a Rangers manager that I warmed to. And a couple of conversations with people close to him afterwards kind of soured my thinking of him as well. So I wasn't sad to see him leave, put it that way.
Yeah.
I think if regardless of the circumstances and how it unfolded and whose side of the story is true. I don't think it was a bad thing that Warburton left at that time. I think it was probably the right thing for all parties.
Yeah. No. Listen, I'm sad to hear you didn't get on with him because I think as a person, and you know, the success at Rangers manager or the stuff when he left, regardless of all that, I find him. I'd love to get him on the podcast, and if you're part of him, it would have been great because the next thing I'd ask you as soon as we hit stop, it'd be going to get my phone. And the reason is, what you get him on. Spend an hour talking about did you wrap it? Did you wrap it or whatever? Did your agent wrap it for you? That would be a question, obviously. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have for Warburton on and no ask him. But I find his career quite bizarre and interesting that he went from zero, you know, football background and just decided one day, having quite a good job in the city and quite a good remuneration package, I'm going to become a football coach. That to me is very interesting. And he's a type of guests that I would love to interview because that's what I was saying earlier about this podcast. I want to get behind. What made you wake up one morning and say, I'm not going to be a City trader anymore. I'm going to be a footballer. You know, I find that part of him fascinating. And I've watched a couple of podcasts, maybe three, that he's done since he's left Rangers. And they all ask him about this transition from City slicker to tracksuit coach. But I don't think they went deep enough. And it's just, I would love to spend an hour with him. If you're watching, I would be interested in getting, yes, you would need to ask him what happened at the end and get his version again. And maybe, you know, a couple of follow-up questions. But, you know, to spend the rest of the podcast talking about those sort of things. I think it's just one of those, there can't be many football managers that you've came across with that background.
I think it does show that there's no set route to become football manager these days. Now, in years gone by, it was former player, hangs up his boots, does his badges, becomes a manager, either does management or he becomes
a bunch. Correct you there, Mr. Struth.
Well, going back slightly further in times, it's Mr. Struth, but generally that was the route that managers came through. It was former players, but you've now seen like Michael Beale just woke up one morning, realised he wasn't going to be a football player, was going to go coaching. Warburton woke up one morning, don't want to be a City trader anymore, I want to be a football coach, ultimately I want to be a football manager. And also shows, I think, that the difference between being a very good coach and being a successful manager. Managers have that X factor, managers have that something different, they've got that personality trait. It's not just a case of being able to put on a very good training session, it's the man management that comes into it. At a club like Rangers, it's having the stature, it's having the mentality, being able to, if there's guys like me writing bad things about you, brushing it off. It's easy to say, oh, we don't listen to the outside noise, whereas really you do. And it's a case of can you have the entire package? It takes the entire package to be a successful Rangers manager. Now, there's been enough people far more qualified and far more experienced in the game than me that have said Warburton was a really good coach. Michael Beale, everybody spoke about Michael Beale's coaching in terms of sessions that he could put on, didn't translate into becoming a successful Rangers manager. I think there's also something in that. What makes a very good coach, which these guys are, to get to the level that they are and what they've done, and what's the bit that's missing from them? What's Michael Beale missing in terms of being a Rangers manager? What did Warburton miss in terms of being a Rangers manager? What then sets them apart from a McLeish or a Gerrard or someone that just got that X factor? I think it's just a personality thing. It's man management. It's having that gravitas and being able to take people with you. Because in every industry, if you don't like the guy you're working for, you're not going to put all of it into it. Man management is, I think, an overlooked thing in the game. It's fine being able to put on a session, but you put on far more coaching sessions than I've ever done. But you could go and read coaching manuals and say, we'll put the cones there and we'll tell them to do that. That's a very different thing from being a football manager and being in charge of a squad, and certainly in charge of a club like Rangers.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And it was something similar. Andy Gorham spent 18 months coaching your kids at Sons of Struth before he unfortunately passed away. And somebody was like that, said to me after a couple of sessions, "Is Andy Gorham like coaching Rangers?" I went, "Andy Gorham's amazing." And I said that several times then, and I've said it several times. Well, Andy Gorham should be coaching football goalkeepers at a far higher level than your kids' football team. And no disrespect to, we've got a guy, Jamie, who's doing our goalie coaching, does a great coach. And no disrespect to guys like him and loads of other Smitty that does Rangers, or these good coaches, good goalkeeping coaches. You can Google a goalkeeping session, and it'll show you where to put the cones and where to put the balls, and have a drill, right? Now, arguably, coaches will get better drills than that. But that part of being a coach, whether it's goalkeeping or outfield players, you can resource that on the internet. But see, when Andy Gorham would stop the goalkeeper and say, "Listen, son, see if you do this," that's 600 games experience he's talking about. That, it was just phenomenal. So yeah, coaching, anybody can coach, because there's enough resource out there you could pick up a bag of cones and a bag of balls and go and take a half-hour session. You could plan it easy enough. But that, it's not just as simple as that. That doesn't bring success. And the difference between doing that and what Michael Beale and Orbitons and all these other, it's totally different, right? But it can be done. But yeah, you're right. So I think the experience is the X factor for folk like Gerrard and stuff like that. And the experience of managing people is the X factor for people like Bill Struth, for people like Walter Smith. That's what the difference is. That's pretty interesting. Now, back to, you've touched on trips abroad, going to some odd places, especially in the early years of Europe with Gerrard. I was that foot soldier. What's the most bizarre situation you've encountered on your trips across predominantly Europe with your job?
The most bizarre trip was probably Ufa. It was like the land that time forgot. If you were to ask somebody, what do you think deepest, darkest Russia is like, write a list. That was basically it. It was a city of a million people. But I'd never even heard of it until Rangers drew them. A city of a million people, really like behind the Iron Curtain type stuff, had not moved on in decades. It was a really strange place. One of the guys on that trip, who I'll save his blushes by naming him, the local PR team decided to take a couple of guys out for a sightseeing tour. So while some of us were at the press conference somewhere at the hotel, these guys went out on this sightseeing tour. So they go and see like a Oki monument or something. I can't remember where they actually went. So they're sitting on this park bench almost, and the guy's like, "Oh, we've got some local delicacies for you." So this stuff gets put out a bag. It's a meat of some description. I don't think it was your Miller and Carter fine steaks. So this meat comes out, and this white fluid comes out that was apparently milk of some description. So everybody had to try it, and, "Oh, it's great. Oh, thanks very much. Oh, I really enjoyed it." On the taxi journey back to the hotel where the guys took an allergic reaction to it, and got back to his hotel room, came down to see us later on, and looked like death warmed up, really gone, eyes popping out his head as he took the reaction to the stuff. But the taxi driver, windows went open in the taxi, it went in this really long-winded way, and it's like the taxi journey from hell. I wasn't actually in the taxi, I only heard about it afterwards, thankfully. But it got to the stage of, did we go and phone a doctor for this guy, just because of the reaction he took to whatever this meat and milk substance actually was. So that's probably one of the more lucky, bizarre incidents. Yes. But overall, I had some trips and had some experiences that I'll just never forget. So obviously, Seville was great, result and match aside. Florida Cup under Murty was probably the best one. I think the guys from other papers still speak of Florida Cup in like the holy grail terms. It was just because we were there for 10, 11 days, I think. So cold and wet back home. We didn't get to jet off to Florida for a couple of weeks. Rangers were good to deal with. Played two games, but work-wise, it's easy. Like, time difference made it easy. All your stuff laid on for you in this week in the apartment block, maybe 7 or 8 of us, and you're just do your stuff. Time difference, phone the desk, you're happy. Job done. Out every night. Go and enjoy the local night spots. And just, I had a...
Just can't stop your missus might watch us, Chris, so just be careful.
It's before I met her, fine. This is a long, long time ago, it's fine. But I just like careering around Florida for 10 days. Just a brilliant one. And the second best one was Villamura, pre-season under Gerard. Mm-hmm. Again, Villamura, great wee place. Got a hotel right on the marina. Do your stuff. Rangers, good to deal with. Gerard, brilliant to deal with. So you've got all your stuff. You can write 2 or 3 days in advance, and then you've then just got the rest of the time to go and go and get a beer down by the marina and get out at night and go for something to eat. And the camaraderie on these trips is great. I think, again, people, some of the people maybe don't get, the best times are just sitting, chilling, chewing the fat, telling stories of previous trips, or some stories are perhaps more, not for a family audience, but some of the key tales of like incidents that guys have got themselves involved in over the years. You can pass hours just sitting with a couple of beers, chewing the fat, and that's what these trips actually provide the platform to do. But Villamura stood out, thanks to Chick Young, because Chick had a friend who had a yacht in Villamura Marina. So one of the boys is friendly with Chick, plays football with him. I got a text to say, I think we'd arranged to meet at 6 o'clock, whatever it was. I got a text to say, are you ready? Downstairs in 2 minutes. Right, downstairs, walk around the marina and see wee Chick stand in the back of this yacht, giving us a wave. So end up on this yacht, 2 or 3 of us, and again, just sitting, beers are flowing, just sitting in this, I think it was about £3-4 million, this yacht. It's like, how did a boy figure look ever end up on a £3 million yacht, just sitting, sun's blaring, ended up out for something to eat afterwards. And it was just one of these nights that Celtic were away. I think Celtic maybe in Austria at that time, but they were moving around various different places. So they're in Austria for a couple of days, and then Germany for a couple of days, and then back to Austria for a game. And the boys are doing a lot of moving around. So obviously the texts are going between the two respective camps. So how's your trip going? It says, we've had like one game at the end of it, brilliant access, sun's shining, and I'm just sending selfies back. Oh, we're sitting on this yacht, and obviously word doesn't come back for the Celtic trip. I think it was the time they were chasing the David Turnbull transfer. As oh, well, he won't, and he failed the medical, and then all sorts. So they're working their arses off to try and fill, and we're sitting in a boat in Villamura Marina having 3 beers all night. Just one of these surreal nights.
What was Chick Young? Was he working the gig, or was he just there on holiday?
He was just there on holiday. He was on the guy, Tommy, that owned the boat. Chick's really pally with him. And every summer, they just go to different places on this yacht on their holidays. And just so happened that it tied in. They were in Villamura at the same time that we were there.
That's Chick Young that supports... Is he a St Mirren fan, isn't he?
Yes, Chick's a St Mirren fan.
See, that's just that stuff that, you know, he was doing what you were doing when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And he supports that, is he? Aye. Must have some binoculars. seen name for the govern stand, but I digress. Aye, fascinating stories, Chris, and fascinating times. I think I think what I've picked up from this chat is your determination. I didn't realise the efforts that you put in to become a journalist in the first place. And that's, I think that's commendable, regardless of whatever you wanted to do in your life. I think that's a story that anybody want to be a football player, a journalist, a space, you can say the space cadet.
I've seen a few of them as well. Last few.
So anybody with any ambitions in life, it's commendable that somebody from you that determination and they actually go and just send blag it, but just to show that determination and drive to succeed is a fantastic thing I've learned at this. So what happens next for you? What is your ambitions? What do you see Chris Jack in 10 years time?
Somebody had asked me 10 years ago where would I have been, who knew. I certainly wouldn't have seen myself at a European final and having a beer in a boat in Villamura or almost witnessing the impromptu death of a valued colleague in a Russian city. It's hard to tell. I think the good thing about the move that I made to Rangers of you in the last 3-4 months or so, it's a model that we're really confident in. It's a model that we think will work, a model that we think will give fans a real insight and give them a product worth paying for. It's not something that's relied on advertising revenue. It's not clickbait, to use that phrase from earlier on. It's a type of journalism I've always wanted to do, the type of journalism that, I mean, you offered me this route into the game all those years ago that I always fancied doing, that I believed I would be I'd be best at. So it's something that, it's a small team, but something that we're really passionate about. Hopefully it's something that the fans like, and we think it's going to be the future of Scottish football journalism. That's not to put down the great work that some of the broadcast guys do, certainly not to put down some of the great work that the newspaper guys do, because I say a number of them have become really close colleagues and friends over the years. Huge respect for the way they do it. Everyone has their own way of working, everyone has their own editors to answer to, everyone has their own targets to hit. And again, I think hopefully, as I've outlined, there's not that many guys, if any, that are playing at it. Now we're all hugely invested in it. And if people understand that and they then want to become hugely invested in us, the product will get better. We can then do more. And ultimately we're asking the questions that the fans want answered. We're the conduit between the fan that sits in the stand and the manager that sits in the dugout. Now we're that middleman. So hopefully we're putting out type of content that people find interesting. Hopefully we're asking the questions that people find informative. And I say, if they do, great. I say the more people that sign up, the better. I think that will be the next stage, next evolution of Scottish football journalism. But it's still, whether that is the future or not, and I think it will be. And if it is, it's formed in the old school values, because the old school values of 1, hard work, 2, chapping doors and always answering your phone, always making the phone calls, they're the foundations of it. You don't get anything just handed to you. Hopefully that's going to come through over a chat, and hopefully those same core values I've been brought up with, the number of guys that I've called colleagues and friends, the number of guys that I've relied on for help and for inspiration and for an arm around the shoulder sometimes, for a kick up the backside at others, all that has made me the writer and the journalist that I am today. And so hopefully that then is taken forward into the next few years, and time will tell what the future holds and where the game takes me.
No, that's very interesting. And as I said, the podcast, and you can sit somebody down, you think the conversation is going to go in a straight line there. It's went with that, and it's been fascinating for me to listen to. For me, that's a bit of connection with the press from, I didn't plan that, what happened to me in 2012, but I now have a sort of more understanding contact with people working in your industry. It's been fascinating for me to see in such a short time, 10 years isn't a massive amount of time, how much it's changed. And it'll be interesting to see where it finishes. And I think there will be casualties. I think there'll be businesses won't do this, because they're not all been switched on enough to see, look, there's a wee bit of niche there. So let's not just stand up saying, oh, we're the media. These have blended into the scenery and the landscape that the world's created for you. And that's the only way businesses will survive, but there's a lot of good and there's a lot of bad out there. But it's been great, your time, Chris. I say to people often that time is probably the best, biggest gift you can give anyone. And you've certainly given me a lot of your time, not just today, but you know, since 2012, and I needed some people to give me exposure. So I can only thank you for that. And best of luck going forward. But Chris, it's been a fascinating chat, and thank you very much.
No problem at all.
Have you enjoyed it?
As always, every chat we use is an enjoyable one, Craig. And we've had many ones over the years. Yeah. We've had more. I think we've probably had more important ones than this over the years. This has been a nice kind of meander through the life and times of the last 15 years. But we think of some of the things that we've done over the years, and some of the issues that we've had to meet head on. They've certainly been far more important than me telling stories of Russia and how I got involved in it. So thanks for all your efforts over the years, and everything you've done for me.
No problem at all. Great to see you again. I'm sure we'll speak again soon. So listen, guys, thanks very much for tuning in to the latest podcast, and I hope you've enjoyed it. And just a request that I always will have, if you've enjoyed the show and you've not already, please hit the subscribe button. If you've enjoyed this particular podcast, hit the thumbs up and have a chat. Put your comments below. Tell us if you're enjoying it. Tell us where you want us to go in the future. And thanks very much, and most importantly, for tuning into this. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.